This week on Making Contact.
Once you label them illegal, illegal immigrants, illegal aliens, you have made them into an illegal people. They are the other. They are less than. And that's exactly how the Holocaust started. They began by calling the Jews illegal people.
President Obama promised to change America's broken immigration system. But the dehumanization of immigrants persists, and the immigration detention industry continues to grow.
Your friends with green cards, those of you who are in the audience with green cards, think you are safe. News for you, you're not safe. Detention facilities filled with people with green cards who have been here 20 or 30 years.
On this edition, Mexican-American journalist Maria Hinojosa speaks about the United States' loss of humanity in dealing with immigrants and immigration. I'm Andrew Stelzer, and this is Making Contact, a program connecting people, vital ideas, and important information. Over the past 25 years, Maria Hinojosa has worked for numerous news outlets, including CNN and NBC. She was the first Latina correspondent for National Public Radio and is currently the host and managing editor of NPR's Latino USA, as well as the host of the PBS TV talk show Maria Hinojosa, One-on-One. Today, we hear excerpts from Hinojosa speaking at the Lannan Foundation's Readings and Conversation series on April 4th, 2011 in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
The essence of community is so important because it changes everything when you have human contact. It changes our minds. We no longer feel like this person is less than human because at this point you have made a contact with them. And community does just that. It allows you to feel bonded to a fellow human being. The enemy becomes less your enemy once you have touched this person. And this person has felt your touch. And that's why, really, I touch everyone who I interview, except for when I'm not allowed. The thing is that I actually do often see my reality as half empty. You know, just reading the paper yesterday, there's a story that I can't get out of my mind. It was a story about a massacre in a village in the Ivory Coast. And they were saying, you know, well, maybe 150 people, but human rights workers were saying more like 300. And they just walked in and there were bodies everywhere, and bodies of children and bodies of women and bodies of men. And I just, them thinking about the terror that they must have felt. And then I think about Rwanda, where I was, and Nairobi, where I was, also with these images of horror. And I was thinking about what is it about human beings that we can do this to one another. And it comes back to where I started, which was about humanity, community, touching, seeing someone, seeing yourself and the person most unlike you, being able to really identify with that person who couldn't be more different than you. And the fact is that when you don't have that, then you dehumanize. You dehumanize. And once you dehumanize, then that's it, basically. Anything can happen. Anywhere. Because these people, this group, is less than human. Is so different than me that there's nothing I share with them at all. So that leads me to a scenario that I'm going to paint for you. And I am going to ask you to tell me where you think, what country you think I'm describing. All right, you are detained. While you are detained, you are fed food that has maggots in it. There is a complaint box, but it is locked. You have to use the toilets in public. There are no partitions. There are five toilets just right next to each other. There's a wall there, and then there are five shower heads. So no partitions, and you basically have to use the toilet and shower with strangers in public. You do not have access to a lawyer or a judge by law. In other words, you are not guaranteed that by law. you can be held With no option to plead your case, you are held mandatorily, by law, mandatorily detained. You are not allowed to post bail or bond at all. You are not promised a phone call. You might get it or you might not, but it's not promised to you. You might be sexually assaulted by a guard while you are in a room sleeping with 50 strangers. And you will be told that sleeping with 50 strangers like this in a public space with bunks is actually good for your socialization. You don't have windows. The windows that do exist actually are cordoned off, and you cannot get close to them. The closest you can get is about 3 feet. You can go for days without seeing sunlight. There is no way for you to demand having sunlight. It will really just depend up to the guards. You might even be sent to a foreign country by mistake. And it would be the mistake of the government of this country that I'm describing for you. And they would have to go and get you and bring you back because they sent you someplace by mistake. You are not, in fact, a felon. You are not, in fact, a criminal. But you do wear a uniform that says jail or prisoner on it. When you arrive, men and women, you will get used sheets. You will, if you're a woman, get underwear that is bloodstained. When you're on a period and you're a woman, you will not get more than one pad at a time. You will have to ask for one every time you need one. Sometimes, if you don't have a pad, well, there's no toilet paper either. There's nothing that you can really do but wait. Wait for a guard to get you some. Hence, the stained underwear. You do not have access to filtered water. The cups, in fact, are behind a locked door. And the water that you do have that comes out of the faucet tastes like chlorine and makes you sick, so you don't drink it. So, where am I? Yeah, it's the United States of America. Right here, right now, today, at this very moment. I want you all to just sit and think. I'm going to just give you another one of these, okay? What would happen if you were fed food with maggots? Uncooked chicken. And why? Because actually, if you serve food that's spoiled, it ends up being cheaper in the end. What would it be like to have to ask for a pad and maybe get one? What would it be like to want to complain, but there's no place to complain to? And actually, when you do complain, you worry about retribution. What does that retribution look like? Well, you know when I told you about that, you're sent to a foreign country by mistake? That's a little bit about what retribution can look like. So, how did this happen? Well, on a technical level, it's because of two things. 1996 immigration reform. Not 1986, which everybody knows, Immigration Reform and Control Act, IRCA, that big moment of amnesty, so-called amnesty. No, 1996, Bill Clinton in power. And the Republicans had taken the House and Senate. And that was when there was not a lot of worry about undocumented immigrants. Actually, immigration was not even kind of on the front burner. Well, this is when these reforms happened that basically decided to put teeth into immigration. the sense was that, you know, the lax immigration laws had been lax, and there really needed to be a system of going and detaining people and searching them down and getting tough with the law. Something else happened, September 11th, which basically pushed a lot of these detention centers to be built pretty quickly because there was a sense that something had to happen. The laws were on the books, and now we just needed the spaces. Which brings me to a third thing that is not quite tied into it, but there were certainly people who understood what was happening here, which is the whole advent of private prisons. Immigrant detainees are the fastest growing use of private prisons in our country. So when you have a bed filled with a body, it equates into a profit for someone. Okay? So just picture that for a second when we think about capitalism, where everybody wants to increase their profits. That's what it's about. Geez, you know, even good old liberals and socialists that I know even want to increase their profits. So here we are talking about increasing your profits. And the way you do that is by increasing the number of people who you have in a bed. So it's beds and profits. Because you have investors and they want to get paid. Now we have to recognize we have the largest civil detention system in the world now exists in the United States, right now in the world. So I think we have to have a conversation in our country about criminal corrections versus civil detention. There's a very big difference. There's a big difference. It's not the same thing. Who is being detained? Who exactly is being detained? We are told by the Obama administration that they are detaining the most serious criminals. Now everybody talks about, uses these terms, criminal aliens. Criminal aliens. You know, it was illegal aliens, it's criminal aliens. Now the term goes hand in hand. And that, when you do that kind of stuff and use that kind of language, leads to what I started off with, which is dehumanization. They're just the other. I mean, really, who cares how they're treated? They're different than us. They're not like us. They're others. They're illegal. Now, there was a moment a couple of years back when I actually did sit down and have an interview with your friend, Sheriff Joe Arpaio from the state over. And now I have to say that I have done a lot of interviews in my life. I have interviewed, you know, skinheads and Aryan racists and, you know, CEOs and tough lawyers and people in, yeah, I know you just, I kind of threw that in there. You know, in almost every situation, interviewing gang members, everything, I really have not been bullied except for Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who was really having a grand time bullying me. And I was kind of holding it all together because I was representing you. So I held it together. I was sweating tons. I was like, oh my God, it's going to look all watery, you know, because it is a visual medium. And, you know, and then at one point, Joe Arpaio, sorry, says, now, I use the term that they use. I would have used illegal alien just because I do that with people. I'll use their term mostly when I'm having a conversation. Well, today, for some reason, maybe because he was bullying me, I was just using the term undocumented immigrant. And so at one point in the interview, he just turns around and says, I got to ask you a question. How come you keep calling them undocumented immigrants, huh? And I was like, wait a second. Usually people aren't throwing questions at me. I'm the one throwing questions at them. What's happening? What? And then I was a little bit thrown off my game and I just said, well, just answer. And so I said, Sheriff Joe, I said, do you know who Elie Wiesel is? And he was like, huh? And I said, Elie Wiesel, the Nobel Peace Prize winner. I said, survivor of the Holocaust. I said, well, actually, the reason why I use the term undocumented immigrant is because he was the one who told me that there is no such thing as an illegal human being. And once you label them illegal, illegal immigrants, illegal aliens, you have made them into an illegal people. They are the other. They are less than. And that's exactly how the Holocaust started. They began by calling the Jews illegal people. And so Those are terms that are being used in our midst and that you probably use without even thinking. And I'm here to ask you to think about that. The next time you hear that, the next time it comes out of your mouth, or the mouth of someone that you know, just say, maybe not. Maybe not that term. I bet many of you have heard another term that might be considered offensive at one point. It was called WAP. How many of you know that term? You're a WAP. Yeah, you know what it stands for, right? Without papers. That's what a WAP is. I know, you all just thought it was something that you said to Italians. It was without papers. So this term has existed long before us.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or for CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. Because of listeners like you, this show is distributed for free to radio stations in the U.S., Canada, and South Africa. To find out how to support us, download shows, or get our podcasts, go to radioproject.org. We now return to hear more of Mexican-American journalist Maria Hinojosa, speaking at the Lannan Foundation's Readings and Conversation series in April 2011.
So, you know, what do the American people want? What do they want? If this is it, well, then here we are, okay? We're people in immigrant detention facilities that are not supposed to be jails, but everything about them says that they're jails, and they're not criminal detainees, they are civil detainees, and where these people actually have less standards, fewer standards, they get worse treatment than the most hardened criminals at the Bureau of Prisons in our country. Please hear me when I'm telling you, the people in these detention facilities, the standards are not there. So if you're in a Bureau of Prison, you'd rather be there. Like the man who I met who was being deported from Miami back to the Dominican Republic and who had spent time in a Bureau of Prison in Pennsylvania. And he was like, BOP, I'm there. This stuff is crazy. What's happening now? So the problem is that, you see, usually we think that in our country, if you have some kind of treatment, there is recourse. There is legal recourse if you're abused. Usually in our country, there is legal recourse. We have rights. Guess what? There are no legal rights, no binding legal rights or standards for those who are detained in immigrant detention facilities in our country. None. None of the standards, wherever they may be, are legally binding at all. Wow. Think about that. And you have a ready population. And you have basically a president and an administration that is very happy, proud of the numbers, the fact that deportations now are higher than they've ever been, and that detentions are just going up and up and up and up and up, and that they have quotas to meet. Now, is that who we are? You know, that maybe you just don't get daylight and you just don't get a phone call. Maybe that's where we are. I'm here to tell you that's where we are. So what does our president say? I don't think he's much of a leader on this. Nope, they are proud of the numbers. Enforcement proves to be a winner because that's what they say that Americans want. Enforcement, looking tough, doing something, cracking down on the problem. Because as long as there are undocumented people in our midst, there is a problem. And so they must be rounded up. And enforcement proves to be a winner. People like those numbers. I guess that's why the Obama administration is so intent on showcasing those numbers. Happily so. Wonderfully so. You'll see. So at what cost? Well, certainly the detention in and of itself comes at a cost of about $2 billion. just the detention, okay? Detention, $2 billion a year. Now, the undocumented immigrants in our midst, in your midst, who are living in fear, they understand this. They understand that they are living in this country without papers. But the people who don't quite get it at all are the people who you know who live in this country with green cards, right? And your friends with green cards, those of you who are in the audience with green cards, think you are safe. News for you, you're not safe. No. Not safe. Not safe. Detention facilities filled with people with green cards who have been here 20 or 30 years. Not safe. No joke. Mandatory detention. Mandatory. Okay? Now, Mark Krikorian from Washington, D.C., who is anti-immigrant, says, you know what? Look, immigration was something that was happening when our country was young. It was our adolescent period. We're more sophisticated and advanced now. We're done with that kind of thing. Okay. He says, over and done with. Done. So, okay, fine, Mark Krikorian. I'd like us to have a national conversation about this so that we can think about the Statue of Liberty, what it says, who we are as a country. But you can't just decide that you're think tank says, okay, we're done with that adolescent period in America of, oh, being so open to all those people. It's done. Well, no. I actually believe that Americans care. I believe that many of them just don't know. And they don't know because the media doesn't tell. And the media doesn't tell because immigration is a toxic issue. Unless, of course, you're Lou Dobbs, although it did turn out to be a toxic issue for him at CNN, cost them $8 million, and the credibility of their network, and having to like bend over backwards to see if they can get a Latino audience that I hope doesn't deliver for them. Because what was it about for Lou Dobbs? Money. It wasn't about making money for CNN, it was about making more money. CNN makes money. They wanted more money. They wanted to get into the ratings battle with Fox, and so that's why Lou Dobbs was there, doing his shtick. Now, for me to talk about immigration, frankly, it's a toxic issue. Again, I use that word because, you know, the assumption is that I have an agenda, that because I was born in Mexico and because I've always been open about the fact that I kind of can't hide the Maria Hinojosa thing, although, boy, have people called me and just been like, can you change your name already? Like, can you Americanize it? And I'm just like, how do you want me to? You know, is it Hinojosa? What is it? Doesn't kind of roll off my tongue, but eh. So people think that I have an agenda. But here's the coolest thing about it is that, yeah, I have an agenda because I'm an American citizen. Because I actually made a choice to become an American citizen. And so I had to think long and hard about that. I had to rescind my Mexican citizenship. And I had to think long and hard about that. And I did. I took the little test. I went in, took my vows, the whole thing. I did it. So it means something to me, you know? It really does. Like when I talk about democracy with my kids, they understand that it's not just about going to the polling booth. It's also about seeing what democracy looks like on the street. And unfortunately, as a journalist, I do not go to demonstrations unless I'm covering them. So that's the hard part about being a mom, because I feel like part of what democracy looks like, not part, an essential part of what democracy looks like is also that, is congregating in groups, in public, outside, being seen, a community, voicing, not just social media. What happened in Egypt, it wasn't because people were just like typing. They were out on the street. That's what democracy looks like, okay? So I take this very seriously, and I believe that what I do and the fact that my family suffers about the fact that they never see their mom and the wife, that I should be there, is because I'm doing this as a civic duty for you. For you, and I do it with con todo corazón. Believe me, I would so love to be retired about now. I swear, I'm tired. But I do this because I know that there are young journalists who are saying, she's doing it. And so I don't give up, I swear. So I just don't understand how much more we can take of this. Because in the wake of this inertia of policy decisions, in this wake of a lack of leadership, in this wake of laws that are coming, that are ripping our country apart, there are human lives in this wake. There are human lives. And I know that the Obama administration says one thing, that they're not for family separation, but the reality is that there is no protocol. There is no protocol for any of these people who are going and detaining immigrants, going into their homes at 6 in the morning and taking them out here and there. And maybe you don't even know it's happening in your community because it happens at 6 in the morning. And there's so much shame involved. There is so much shame. But never at that moment is there any protocol about asking this person who is now detained, do you have American-born children? Because that might matter. That might matter because then that person who's going to be put in a detention center that is basically a tent, okay, where you're not supposed to be held for more than a couple of weeks, suddenly you're held there for 2 years because you're going to fight your case because you have American citizen children. And that is costing you and me $122 per day, per head, okay, because that's the way they talk about it, per head. The government is paying to the private detention facility. And how much is he actually spending on that detainee? Well, I talked about the food with maggots because it saves money, so you get the picture. But we're paying $122 per head to now detain the largest group of detainees ever. How do you feel about that? Not me. How do you feel about that? What are you going to do about that? How much are you going to talk about that? It's not about me. It's about you. I will need your help. Yes, let me tell you, I will need your help because they will come after me. Yeah, it's not going to be pretty. But the thought that I want to leave you with is this. What does it mean that right now in our country, someone can be denied basic due process? A human being can be denied due process in our country. What does it mean if that can happen within our borders? In a way, what I'm asking all of you to do at every moment in your lives is to think about being the other, is to think about living your life like the other in our United States day after day. Thank you so much.
That was NPR and PBS host Maria Hinojosa speaking in Santa Fe, New Mexico on April 4th, 2011. And that's it for this edition of Making Contact. Special thanks to the Lannan Foundation. To hear a full-length version of this lecture and a question and answer session, go to our website, radioproject.org. For a CD copy of this program, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736. Or check out our website, radioproject.org, to get our podcast, download past shows, or help make a difference by supporting our work. Lisa Rudman is our executive director, Con Pham, associate director, Hyunjin Lee and Esther Mania, producers, Carl Jagbanan Singh, volunteer coordinator, Lisa Bartfai, production intern, Irene Flores, web intern, Dan Turner, Ron Rucker, Alton Bird, Alex Collins, Judy Huang, and Dashiell Moore, volunteers. I'm Andrew Stelzer. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.